everybody. Jeff Jones here. Welcome to the weekly Chase Oaks Church podcast. Before we dive in, I want to encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel and download the Chase Oaks Church app. The app is the best place to catch up on messages, engage with our community, and stay in the loop with everything going on around here. Most importantly, my hope is that today's message inspires you to take your next step in your faith journey. Here we go. Hello, everybody. I missed you guys. Gone for doing some travel, doing different things. And it's great to be back, and loved the, man, everybody who spoke, and I got to be there online or sometimes here in person, and it's so great. And today we are starting a new series called Strange Math, and it's about the new calculus that Jesus came to bring. It's a very different way of thinking. And then we've grown up in our culture. So you can consider old math versus the Jesus math that we will talk about. And when we think about math, some of you love math. And I love you. But I'm not one of you people. And like my dad was, was just thought that way. He thought in formulas. He thought in logic. He thought science. And that's why he got a full ride scholarship to MIT for his undergrad and for his graduate work too. And so you would think with that, with my dad, that I would carry that on, but obviously on the shallow end of that gene pool. And my approach to math, my strategy in school was just fake it till you make it. And I was motivated to make good grades, but that's all I was trying to get out of it. I don't think, especially as we got more advanced, I don't think I understood any of it. I just tried to fake it until I made it. And I eventually did make it out of there, and thinking, oh, thank goodness, I don't have to worry about math. And that worked pretty well for me up until the time that our kids got in high school. And then they were like, hey, Dad, I need some help with math. And so I was like, okay, no problem. I made good grades in math, and then I looked at their math. I had no idea what was going on with that. It was like all new math. It was all strange math to me, and yet I didn't want to admit that, so I said, well, you know, it's not right for me just to do your homework. I'll encourage you as you work it out. What do you think? They saw right through that, went to Christy, and she helped him. Because math is strange. But Jesus came with a whole new math. Like you talk about new math, you know, in different generations. This, what Jesus brought was a whole new calculus to life. Really was new math that led to something. Because Jesus said, I have come that you may have life and live it to the full. It's what the Apostle Paul will later call life that is really life. But in order to get that, it does require new math. And it was crazy what Jesus said. I mean, this is the kind of crazy math that Jesus brought. He said things like this, that we win by losing. We receive by giving. We live by dying to self. We grow by emptying. We gain by releasing. He said the only way that we can gain life is to lose the one we have. Which really doesn't make sense in a world that says, no, it's about you, and you grab it and get what's yours and keep it and hold on to it. And Jesus says, no, you'll never find life that is really life that way. And in a consumption-driven culture, you and I can so easily, in fact, without major intervention, without a major perspective change, you and I will miss life that is really life, because you and I will never consume our way to life that is really life. We can only generous our way there. And that's what Jesus tried to say over and over again. In fact, when Jesus was on the planet, he talked more about money than any other single topic. You know, one out of every seven of the sentences that Jesus said, one out of every seven was about money or generosity or possessions. He talked more about money than any other topic. He talked more about money than he did the Bible, than he did about God, than he did about prayer, than he did about the importance of community and relationships and all of that. And you think, well, why is it that big a deal? And you get a big clue of that when he said things like this in Matthew 6, when he said, you cannot serve both God and money. Because what he's saying is, you and I will be driven by one or the other. Either we'll be driven by consumption or fear, greed or fear with money. Either we'll be driven by money or we'll be driven by God and his purposes, but it's not gonna be both. What's driving our life will either be God and his kingdom, and that'll lead to a certain direction, that'll lead to life that is really life, or we live for money. And Jesus wanted to make sure that we understood, hey, if you really want to gain life, it's going to take some new math. Now, I am going to be talking today, today we're talking about the new math of generosity, so I'm talking about generosity, and that does mean giving, and so I'm just going to get something out of the way right now, because some of you, I know, are thinking, oh, no, I came to church on this one, or I invited my friend to church on this one. And some of you I know are at for good reason, probably at a cynical place or skeptical place about church and money and pastors talking about money because it's self-serving and you just want my money. And I told you I don't go to church because all they want is your money. And let me give you two big outs, okay? The first out is I am going to talk about generosity. I'm not going to give you that out because the only way to live a Jesus-oriented life is a generous life. And I think you'd agree with, okay, generosity is a good thing. But here's the out I'll give you. You don't have to be generous here. In fact, I don't even want you to be. If you can't do it cheerfully, the Bible says God loves a cheerful giver. And so he doesn't need grumpy money. He's not hard up for cash. So if you think, well, I'm not ready to give here. I don't trust here. I don't know, I don't know about this, yet. That's fine. Just give somewhere else. And think about it that way. Until you get to a place that hopefully like most of us are in this room, just say, no, I love this place. I know what's going on here. I want to give. I want to be part of it financially and all that. We've got the whole gamut. So I'll just give you that out. I will talk about generosity, but steer it the way that you can do so cheerfully. The second out is you can totally blow off what Jesus is going to say. I'll still love you. In fact, I won't even know. But I'm going to encourage you not to. Because what Jesus is going to say today is the difference between the kind of life you really deep down want and that you were created to experience and something way, way cheaper than that, way less than that. It's that big of a deal. Like everything that Jesus came to bring is what we're talking about. He wants us to experience. And the biggest competition to that is living for something else, living for money rather than God. And you and I, like I said, will never consume our way to a great life. And even if we have money, we'll never hold on to it in fear and lead to a meaningful life. We can only faith and generous our way. And that's what he's going to talk about. Now, as he talks about it, and many of us are there, we want to go deeper in this, and I hope we all will take some big steps. Because Jesus is going to talk about it. He talks about it a lot, but we're going to look at a particular story that he told. And it's such a great story. It's a story of the rich fool. You know any rich fools? It's a story of the rich fool. And the story, it happens in a context. So Jesus was teaching, and I want you to picture the situation, okay? So Jesus was out teaching in a village. There were a lot of people there. He was teaching the crowds. Right around him, we just finished the series Outsiders, the followers of Jesus that were closest to him, including the disciples and others. They're all like right there. Because he's going to turn to them later and talk to them. And then that's his inner circle, but he's also speaking with the whole crowd, and he's interacting. And so as he's interacting with the crowd, here's what happens in Luke 12. Someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." So you can imagine what's going on here. The dad has died. These are two sons, the older and the younger. And in that culture, the way it worked is the inheritance would go almost completely to the older brother, and then the oldest son in the family would decide how much the other siblings would get. And in this case, the younger sibling is not so happy about what the older brother is doing. And so he's there with Jesus. He knows that Jesus talked over and over again about money and generosity. So for him, this is perfect because he's going to lay it out there. And he knows Jesus, who's so generous and talking about generosity all the time, is going to say, come on, goober, be generous to your brother. It's kind of like, we do the same thing. If you've been to church and they're talking about some topic like maybe generosity or forgiveness or bitterness or whatever, and you start thinking about other people that really need to hear this, you know, and maybe you send it, yeah, you got it, or the person next to you kind of elbow them. Why don't you listen? They're talking about kindness, you know, patience or whatever. And rather than just thinking, okay, God, what do you want to do? You know, what are you doing in my life? And that's kind of what's going on here. And he's assuming Jesus is going to zing his older brother. But Jesus is too smart to get involved in the family drama. In fact, he's going to do something much more significant. He's going to give the younger brother something that he doesn't think he needs, but he desperately needs. And in the process, you and me as well. Jesus says this, "Man, who appointed me a judge or an arbiter between you two?" And then he said to them, both of them, "Watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions." The youngest brother thinks that his problem, money problem, is he doesn't have enough money, and if he just gets more money, he won't have any problems. And we can think like that too. My money problem is I don't have enough money. And sometimes that is true, but most of the time that's really not our problem, because even if we get more money, if we have the same mindset, if we have the same patterns, it's really not gonna help a whole lot. It's really not gonna solve anything. It'll help us in the short run, but not in the long run. And what Jesus is gonna give is way more helpful than just more money. Jesus is gonna give perspective. He's gonna give new math. Perspective that leads to life that is really life. And he says, watch out. Be on guard against all kinds of greed. That consumer thing that just keeps us, you know, the next thing, the next thing, the next thing. Or greed that shouts, hold on to it, don't give it, you may need it one day. Be careful, because that will shrink your life to nothing. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions, he says. In fact, in the original language of the New Testament, which is Greek, and I'm gonna make several observations. I'm gonna nerd out a little bit. I mean, I had to learn Greek in, you know, seminary. I might as well go there, okay? So we're gonna look back at the original language of the New Testament. This is the NIV, it's a great translation, but sometimes it's really hard to pull some things out when you translate. And so I'm gonna pull some things out. And right here is the first one, because literally when it says life does not consist in an abundance of possessions, the literal phrasing, if you just translate it super literal, is this: life does not exist in possessions. Or another way to do it is life is not found in possessions. If you're looking for life, which we all are, meaning, significance, purpose, joy, life is not in possessions. We're in a culture that thinks it is. We all think we do. But life, what Jesus is saying, if you're looking for life there, it's not there. Life is not in possessions. And then he's going to illustrate that. And he's going to illustrate it by telling a story. And it's a story of a rich person, a rich guy, which is kind of fun. Because isn't it always fun to look into the world of rich people? People have a whole lot more money than you do. Like, you know, the old show, Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous, and then Cribs, and now, you know, there's all this stuff. You can look online, whether it's Bill Gates or Elon Musk, what is his house like? I wonder what their vacations are like. Or, like, not too long ago, I got this is probably about a year ago, on some social media thing, I guess they thought I wanted to know about this because I like the mountains and skiing and all that, and I got this story about Tom Cruise selling his house in Telluride, the vacation home in Telluride, Colorado. And for $40 million, it could be mine, which would be pretty awesome. I mean, I looked at it. Like, in fact, I'll show you. Here's the living room. I mean, can't you see yourself there? I mean, you could love Jesus there, right? You could read the Bible and pray and be so, I mean, I think I would be way godlier if I had that. And then there's another picture. He's got a bunch of acreage and all this, these trails and all this, and, you know, for his toys. And my only problem is I just need $40 million more. And then I'd be okay, right? Then I'd have it. But it's interesting looking at the lives of rich people. And this is the life of a rich person. But here's what we have to understand before we go on with the story. Is that, yeah, Tom Cruise is wealthier than probably anybody in this room right now, but what we need to understand is you and I actually are the rich people. In terms of global wealth, you and I are the rich people. And therefore, Jesus' warning, we really need to perk up, because probably what he's warning against almost certainly is happening to every one of us. And we don't know it in this culture. I mean, the average, if you're just the average household income in Collin County, you know where that puts you in terms of global wealth? You're a one percenter. You're in the top 1% of the world's wealthy if you're average. And some of you are like, well, I'm not average, I'm below average. Okay, so you're a 2%er. So whether you're in the top 2 or top 1% of the world's wealthy, there's a lot we need to think about when we're wealthy. And this story is not just the story of a rich guy, it's a story of the rich fool. Because when we're wealthy, we can become foolish. Wealth will make us foolish. And that's what happens here. Well, how's he foolish? How's this rich guy foolish? Well, here's the story. The ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest. This was a farming culture, an agrarian culture. So that's where wealth was in land. And this guy is really wealthy. We know he's really wealthy because, again, going back to the Greek stuff, the word translated ground there is more typically translated region. This isn't like a field. This is a massive farm. This is region. Think Texas Panhandle region. Think Rhode Island or something. Like just massive farm. This guy is really wealthy. And he has a huge windfall. The region yielded an abundant harvest. So now he has this massive influx of wealth. He's already wealthy. Now he's wealthier. And what's he going to do? And this is going to reveal his mindset. Old math or new math, typical way of thinking or Jesus way of thinking, here's what happens. He thought to himself, what shall I do with my windfall? I have no place to store my crops. His barns were already full of grain. Then he said, this is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones, and there I will store my surplus grain. And I'll say to myself, you have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy, eat, drink, and be merry. That may seem wise, but we're going to see how foolish it is. In fact, again, going back to Greek, nerding out on Greek, when the little phrase it says, I'll store all my surplus grain, more literally, he says, there I will store all my grain and all my possessions. His instinct was, I'm holding on to all of it because it's mine. He stores it up, even though he's already got way too much. He said, I'll just tear down my barns and build bigger ones, and I'll have more grain than I could ever use, so I don't have to worry about things anymore. He's completely self-focused. That's where he's foolish. He thinks life is there. He thinks security is there, and he's completely self-focused. In fact, he's so self-focused, this is, I think, the last time I'll nerd out on the Greek stuff, okay? But when you look at the translation or when you look at the Greek, I just think this is fun. He says, I will say to myself, and it's in NIV and the other translations don't bring it out, but he actually says self. He calls himself self in the original language of the New Testament in Greek. So he says, I will say to myself, self, you have plenty. He's talking to himself. You ever talk to yourself? Sometimes you're the most interesting person around to talk to, right? Then why not? But I don't think I really talk to myself, but I kind of do, because this is who I talk to a lot in our house, and that's our dog, Chewy. And he's such a good listener, right? This is me when I'm talking to him, and he's just like a perfect little listener, right? So he's a great listener. He doesn't contribute a whole lot to the conversation. But I don't talk to myself, but I do talk to Chewy, so maybe I talk to myself. But this guy's talking to himself, and this is kind of a by the way, because a by the way is the wealthier you get, typically the more isolated you get. He has nobody to talk to. He's going to talk to himself. And you have to fight it. Some of you are growing in wealth, and the more wealthy you are, the easier it is for all kinds of reasons to be isolated, and you have to fight that. But he says to himself, self, you have plenty and stored up and all that. Completely self-focused. In fact, he's so self-focused, we're going to do some math. We're going to look at, I'm going to have you literally do some math now, okay? I'm going to have you count the personal pronouns like I, me, mine, or when he says self. Does that make sense? I'm going to read, this is my translation of the passage, and I just want you to count. We can all do this. This is an advanced math, just counting. I want you to count the personal pronouns. So every time he says I or my or me or self, okay? Or even sometimes, then he talks to you. So you is, even though that's first, second person, but he's talking to himself, so we'll count it as first. You got it? So here we go. Just count. Don't count out loud. I'll ask you the number at the end. What shall I do? I have no place to store my crops. I know what I will do. I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones, and there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I'll say to myself, self, you have plenty of good things laid up for many years. Eat, drink, and be merry. Somebody said it, 13. 13 is at least my count. Of course, I'm bad at math. Maybe it's something else, but you get the idea. 13 times in three sentences. Me, myself. Totally self-focused. And that's not abnormal. Right? Because all of us tend to see our stuff, our money, our possessions, our resources, our salary, or whatever, as mine. Right? It's mine. I work for it. It's mine. But that's not right. It's not true. Even if you're not a Christian, it's not true. But if you're a Christian, you should really know it's not true. That everything we have does not belong to us. It belongs to God. God is the owner of all that we have, not just our money, but our time, our gifts and abilities, the influence we have. All of that is owned by God, given to us as an investment, and one day he will call on that investment. We are the owners, or the stewards is kind of the churchy biblical word that's often used. We are stewards of what we have, not owners of what we have, which changes everything once you understand that. It's not ours. It's his. And one day, we're going to give an account, and it will matter. And we'll talk about that a little bit later, what happens with that in terms of reward. It's not ours. It's kind of like a couple weeks ago, the people who manage our investments had a get-together, had it like a party. And we didn't go because we were too busy, but it was at, I think, the PGA headquarters or whatever. It'd be really fun. And I think it's a great thing for them to do that for their customers. I really do. And they, you know, they take a percentage or whatever, and they're it's out of that percentage. And they've choose. It's nice of them to do it. Okay, so if you work for them or work for another company like that, great, glad you do it. However, I had this nagging little thought the whole time of, hey, wait a minute. It's not really your money. I mean, you're throwing the party, and I know it's out of your percentage, but it's really not your money. How about just a little check, you know? And I know that's terrible because it's nice of them to do that, but it's not their money. And that's better than if I gave them some money to invest and they said, oh, thank you, because I've got tuition payments for my daughter coming up. I'd be like, dude, it's not for that. It's not for your daughter's tuition. I mean, it's not a donation. It's my money. I'm asking you to manage it and grow it. And that's the reality, that what we have is actually not ours. It's God's. And one day he will call on that account. So the guy has a lot of unwisdom here. I mean, it was wise that he got wealthy. There's a lot of wisdom into getting wealthy, and that's great. He'd been disciplined. He worked hard. There's no evidence he did something unethical. There's no problem in the Bible about being wealthy. In the New Testament, the Bible says, hey, command those who are rich in this present world not to put their hope in wealth and be generous and ready to share. It doesn't say, command those who are rich in this present world to feel terrible about themselves and give all their money away. It doesn't say that. This guy was wisely wealthy. It's just once he got wealthy, he got unwise, because wealth can make us foolish. And we see that in what he says to himself in verse 19. He says, self, you have plenty of good things laid up for many years. Eat, drink, and be merry. He gets to a place where he realizes, I don't have to worry about money anymore. Now I can eat, drink, and be merry. I mean, isn't that the American dream? To get to a place where you have so much saved up, you can quit work, and you don't ever have to worry about money ever again. You feel bulletproof. Even if things go up and down in the market, it doesn't matter. It doesn't affect you because you've got so much. It doesn't matter. Now I can just eat, drink, and be merry. And that's what he tells himself. That is the American dream. That's what everybody's shooting for. I mean, he wouldn't sign up for that. Think, yeah, that's wise. That's where it is, right? And by the way, I think if this story was played out more, that feeling of, oh, I've got enough, I don't have to worry, that lasts about 30 minutes. Because the more you have, the more you worry. What I've seen around the world is that I've been among the poorest of the poor, and you know who worries the least about money? Those who have none of it. And those who worry the most about money are the ones who have most of it because they have so much to lose. I talked to another financial planner, not mine, but another one, who said one of her big jobs is helping people who've been wise enough to accrue a lot of wealth to let go of it, to spend it, to give it, to enjoy it, to be generous with it, because they're so used to hanging on to it as their security. They're too afraid to let it go because that's their hope. Because wealth makes us foolish. And we see how foolish it is, even the American dream, because it's not the end of his story. What happens to him is going to happen to you too, and me. He dies. Verse 20, but God said to him, you fool. This guy who's been so wise to be so wealthy, God said to him, you fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you prepared for yourself? Now, in the story, he doesn't say how he dies and all that. In my mind, he's like at his desk in his office, and he's drawing up the architectural plans for his new barns, and he's thinking about all his stuff, and his heart begins to race because he's so excited. It races so much. He has a heart attack, and he's a goner. That's just my imagination. But that night, he dies, and God's, at the end of his life, he has nothing to show for it. So much so that God says, you fool, this very night, your life will be demanded, and you've got nothing to show for your life. And then Jesus adds, this is his punchline. This is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves, but is not rich toward God. This is how it will be with anyone, any one of us, who stores up things for themselves, but is not rich toward God. We will hear, you fool. Your life could have been so different. Your life could have been so much better. Your impact so much richer. And by the way, it wasn't your money anyway, and you have nothing to show for it. This is how it will be with anyone. What does it mean to be rich toward God? I mean, we know what it means to be rich, but what does it mean to be rich toward God? Well, we can imagine, right? Being rich toward God means that we're generous, that we're ready to share. That part of why we'll talk about this next week, part of why God gives us money is to enjoy, but also to invest and to be part of what God's purpose is in this world. And to make it really clear, Jesus turns. So he's talking to the crowd, and then he turns to, remember the Outsiders, that series, right? We just talked about it. He turns to his closest followers. Now, if you're a follower of Jesus, perk up. Imagine yourself in the crowd, and all of a sudden, he just looks and goes, okay, I'm going to zero in on you. You've decided to follow me. Not all of you have decided to follow Jesus yet. I get it, but this is part of it, so perk up too. So for those who have, just imagine Jesus saying, guys, I really don't want you to miss this. Because if you miss this, you miss everything. And here's the passage. It's an extended passage. Then Jesus said to his disciples, therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat, or about your body, what you will wear. For life is more than food, and the body more than clothes. Don't think about stuff. Consider the ravens. They do not sow or reap. They have no storeroom or barn, but God feeds them. And how much more valuable you are than birds. Who of you, by worrying, could add a single hour to your life? Since you cannot do this very little thing, because for God, adding an hour is no big deal. But since you cannot do this very little thing, why do you worry about the rest? Consider how the wildflowers grow. They do not labor or spin, yet I tell you, not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these. If that is how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown into the fire, how much more will he clothe you, you of little faith, when we worry about money? And do not set your heart on what you will eat or drink. Do not worry about it, for the pagan world runs after all such things. That's what they're driven by. And your Father knows you need them. And then here's the big command. This is the change, the shift, the new math, the new perspective. But you, follower, disciple, you seek his kingdom. And these things, stuff, possessions, money, provision, will be given to you as well. Do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions, give to the poor, provide purses for yourselves that will not wear out, a treasure in heaven that will never fail, where no thief comes near and no moth destroys, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. He looks at his followers. Today, that's you and me, if you are one. And he says, don't just do what everybody else does. Instead, make what I will call the kingdom shift. I've got to be careful how I say that in church. The kingdom shift, S-H-I-F-T, okay? The kingdom shift. What does it look like to, and the reason I'm using the word shift, even though I know it's a dangerous word, is that a Chase Oaker that we interacted with, a couple of Chase Oakers, were talking to me about, Jeff, you need to talk more about generosity than you do. You need to talk more about, because when we made that shift, and they called it the generosity shift, like God really does respond to that. He really does. And had this whole story about this is what's happened. And then I talked to another person not long after that, who used the same expression, the generosity shift, which was really interesting to me. And I thought, well, that's helpful. Because that's really what Jesus is saying is, you're on a trail, shift. Make a kingdom shift, a generosity shift, to say, my life's not going to be about what everybody else's life is about. My life's going to be about God's kingdom. And I'm going to trust him to provide. I'm not going to focus on that. I'm going to focus on his kingdom. I'm going to focus on giving my life away for him. Everything, not just my money, everything, my time, my resources. I'm going to focus on him. And by kingdom, I know that's kind of strange language. We don't talk that way. Jesus talked about it all the time. And the reason he talked about it all the time is that is the essence of what he came to bring. It's not just, Christianity is not just, hey, believe some things, you go to heaven one day. That is true, but Christianity is about what God invites us to be part of now. Jesus came to make it possible for us to know God, but he also came to reverse the messed up world we live in. That's what he means when he talks about his kingdom, and over again when you read the New Testament about the kingdom, is it's just life with God as the king and everybody acknowledging that, life as it should be. The world is not as it should be. It is messed up. I don't have to prove that. But Jesus came to start the process of unmessing up the world. And one day he will return, and it will be a new heaven and a new earth, and heaven will be life on earth as it was originally meant to be with Jesus as king and everybody living in that and acknowledging that. That'll be great. But he starts the process when he comes to the earth when he came the first time. He'll complete it the second time, and now he invites you and me as his church to be part of growing his kingdom. That's what he's doing. He is changing the world. He's making the world over the way it should be, bringing light into darkness and hope into hopelessness. That's what we get to be part of. He's at work. He invites us to join him. And that's the shift of saying my life is not just about me. Because naturally what we'll do is we'll seek first all this other stuff. Like, we'll make sure I'm set. Like, I've got enough money. I'm okay. And then I can be generous. And then I can do stuff for God. Jesus is saying, no, you'll never get there. You just focus on doing stuff for God and being generous and being part of God's work in the world. And then God, that'll attract his provision in your life and his enablement in your life. And this is where new math comes in. When we make that shift, the other side of the equation is God pours out all kinds of things into our life. It's in the passage. I mean, here's just a few. I just have to go through it quickly. The sound guy's letting us know. The first one is purpose. Purpose. What Jesus offers is a life of purpose. Not just money or stuff or whatever, but a life where we get to the end of our life and we think, wow, look at all I got to be part of. Look at the eternal difference I was able to make because I gave my life to something bigger. Also, provision. If you want to be on your own financially, then just do what the rich fool did. But if you want to open up your life to God's financial enablement, his provision in your life, do what he says. Seek first his kingdom, and then all this other stuff will be added. It's not God will add, and then you can do stuff. Nope, God responds. He is generous to the generous. When we begin to invest our lives, then he begins to provide for us. Also, peace that comes with that. We don't have to worry about money, Jesus is saying. In fact, Jesus says it's stupid to worry about money because if you're focused on God's kingdom, God promises to provide. You really can trust him. He's good at doing what he says. So you don't have to imagine being free from worry. Reward. He said, sell your possessions, give to the poor, provide purses for yourselves that will not wear out, a treasure in heaven that will never fail, where no thief comes near and no moth destroys. What Jesus is saying there is when we are generous and we focus on giving rather than keeping or just consuming, every time we do that, we are rewarded in eternity. You and I can't keep what we have. Like, that's why, when there's a funeral, you don't see a U-Haul behind the hearse, right, with all their stuff because you can't take it with you, but you can send it on ahead. And the way we send it ahead, our eternal wealth will be completely dependent, our eternal wealth, on what we do with our earthly wealth. It's based on reward. And Jesus talked about this all the time. Either you enjoy it now or you enjoy it for eternity. Eternity is a lot longer, so you may want to think about it. And then, in addition to reward, is spiritual growth. Jesus said, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Here's what that means. It's not grow your heart and then you'll give and you'll be generous. It's actually the other way around. He says, you give your treasure and your heart will follow. If you want your heart for God and his purposes to grow, don't wait for your heart to grow, because the way your heart will grow is for you to take that generosity step, and when you do, your heart will follow your treasure. It's just like if you begin to invest in a company. When Christy and I were newly married, we had no money because of a friend that was an executive at Exxon. We got in this program where 100% of your money, no fees, went to Exxon, in stock. And so we started doing $50 a month into Exxon stock. We never thought about Exxon until then. And then every time we passed an Exxon, we were like, I wonder how we're doing. Like we owned it, But and when we had to choose, do we do Exxon or Racetrack or whatever? Maybe a few cents more, but, helps our bottom line. As if, but we would go, and think, well, let's think about Exxon. All of a sudden, we cared about Exxon, right? Because our heart follows our treasure. Now, you put all that together, that's a lot. God says, hey, I'll fill your life with purpose, provision, peace, reward, spiritual growth. That's not bad. It's different math. Old math is, the way we think is, 100 minus 50 equals 50. Jesus' math or divine math is 100 minus 50, when we are generous, is 1,000x. It invites God's generosity into our life. So what do we do with this? Because really all I do each week, or our speakers do, is, hey, let's look at the Bible and then apply it to our life. It's not complicated. And we do that because Jesus said, hey, if you want to be blessed, those who are blessed are people who are like somebody who builds their house on solid foundation. That those who are blessed are people who put my words into practice. Not who know my words, but who actually do my words, who put it into practice. And so each week we just say, okay, what does it mean to put that into practice? Depth is about taking it deeper into our thinking and deeper into our life. It's not just new stuff, new knowledge. That's nothing. But how do we take what we know, what God says, and take it deeper and deeper into our thinking, into our life? That's depth. So what does it look like here? I'm going to suggest two things. One is, decide right now to make the kingdom or generosity shift. Or if you said, I think I've already done that, just say, really? And that's because that's what I'm saying to myself is, what would it look like if I really took that deeper, the generosity shift? And talk about it with somebody else who could be objective about your life. I'm going to talk about it with my accountability partner, Bruce Miller. It'd be great if you're married to talk about that. Christine and I should do that too. What would it look like? All right, there we go. Real preachers use these. Do you ever notice that? And they have like a Kleenex because they get sweaty. I'm going to do that. I'm going to start doing that. And the second thing is come next week. Because next week what we're going to be talking about is how do we make this practical? Because it's easy. Oh, yeah, I want to be generous. I think I am generous. And how do you know? Because the Bible doesn't leave it up for grabs. The Bible gives us principles and says, okay, this is what that would look like. And this is what I'll respond to, God would say. And so what does it just look like to be really, hey, what does it mean to make this concrete? And I know it's easy to blow off. But don't be like the guy in the story and just blow it off. Be wise enough to say, no, I want to get this right. Because at the end of life, we'll look back and be like, man, I'm so glad I did. In fact, that's what most of my day was today, or a good chunk of it at least, was I was at a funeral of a Chase Oker. Some of you, I'm looking at right now, were there. Because this was a funeral for somebody, long-term Chase Oker, who Ellen Elwood, and she and her husband, Vince, served in our church for decades. They were on our elder board. They were incredibly godly, wonderful people. They retired, went to East Texas a couple years ago, and she got sick and passed away, and her memorial service was today. And man, what a tribute. Her children all gave these amazing tributes of this woman who was clearly had made the kingdom shift, whose life was about God and his purposes, and she was generous and lived large, and it was inspiring. And you see these hundreds of people there who've been impacted by her life. And you realize this is what rich toward God looks like. And when she died, she did not hear from God, you fool. What she heard was, well done, my good and faithful servant. You did so much with the little I gave you. Now there's laid up for you so much in heaven for eternity. And that's what I want to hear. For me, that's what I want to hear for you. And it's really that big, what we're talking about, is what is driving our life. Because whatever drives our life, we'll get to one destination or another. And so with that in mind, let's bow our heads together, pray. And I'm going to encourage you just to say, God, I want to make that generosity shift, kingdom shift, perspective shift. I don't want my life just to be about what everybody else's life is about. I want to live bigger than that. And God, help me to really live more and more that way. So when I get to the end of my life, I don't hear you fool. But I hear, well done. Well done, my good and faithful servant. I gave you a little bit and you did so much with it. And you built a great life. You had such great impact. And now there's in store for eternity so much for you. Father, we pray that that will be our story. Help us take steps that direction. In Jesus' name, amen.